It's a very big test. You know, I think Atlanta was probably one or two in about every category there was offensively a year ago. And, you know, based on a season ago, they got pretty hot and, you know, were the best team in our conference.
Defensively, really strong and stout against the run. You know, when you study their stuff from last year and even into the preseason, very square at the line of scrimmage, very strong.
Cheers, Bears fans! Welcome to our very first Bears on Tap podcast. I am Aldo Gandia, and those voices you heard belong, of course, to head coach John Fox of the Chicago Bears and Atlanta Falcons head man Dan Quinn. This show previews the Bears' upcoming game. Our first interview will always be with someone very familiar with Chicago's upcoming opponent. And in this, our debut show, we've got a great guest to help us focus on the Falcons. He is Aaron Freeman, the mastermind behind the popular FalkFans.com website. More on Aaron in a minute. Later in the show, Ross Reed of the Mac and Reed Show and Coffin Corner podcast will join me to zero in on the Bears. But before I bring them on, I want to start with this. How lucky are we? The start of a fresh NFL season is here. The Chiefs have upset the Patriots on Thursday night, and on this Sunday, the Bears begin their 98th season. No other franchise has won more games, 739, than the Bears. They've won 9 NFL championships. One of them, of course, was Super Bowl XX with a team that captured the hearts of fans all around the world. But I don't need to tell you that this team has been testing the patience of many fans. Fewer and fewer victories has meant more and more empty seats at Soldier Field and viewers on TV. But if you're listening to this, you're part of a special breed, a true navy blue and burnt orange football fan. You care about the Chicago Bears like Walter Payton cared about gaining an extra yard. Your passion for Chicago football is unquestioned. You want to toast those most responsible for a win and roast those undeserving of our passion. Each loss ruins our week. Each win makes us stronger. Here at the Bears Barroom Radio Network, we've got you covered with 3 weekly shows. On Monday nights, Bears Are Alive, our call-in show that features you talking with draft Dr. Phil Latoshin. On Wednesday, Bears 100 Proof, our R-rated, fun, funny football analysis show with Phil and Shane Marsaw, the smartest man in the barroom. And now this show, Bears on Tap. Nothing is going to stop our devotion to covering the Bears for you, the most devoted of all Bears fans. Okay, let's get down to business. Aaron Freeman has been covering the Falcons for over a decade. He started FalkFans.com all by himself, and it has grown into a hugely popular fan site. He's host of the podcast Locked On Falcons and co-host of Falcon Central Radio. Aaron Freeman, welcome to Bears on Tap, and I must begin by asking, how is Falcon Nation holding up after what was a catastrophic Super Bowl performance?
See, we're jumping into the deep end right off the bat. They're doing as well as you probably could think they are doing. You know, some people are dealing with it better than others. I think it's going to be a tough, long year because it's going to be thrown in our face throughout the season. Really, if anything goes bad, 28-3, memes and jokes will spring up. If anything goes right, people will still throw that back in our face just to knock us down a peg. So it's going to be a little bit of a tough year to get through that. But they say what doesn't kill you makes you stronger, right?
Right, absolutely. Now, it seems like there's a lot of anticipation this year for the Falcons. I know I've been a longtime Bears fan, and back in 84 when the Bears lost to the Washington Redskins, I think it was in the second round of the playoffs, you sensed that this team was on the brink of being really special. Is there that sense with the 2017 Atlanta Falcons? I remember years ago, Bum Phillips, the then coach of the Houston Oilers, said after a very successful but not championship-winning season, last year we knocked on the door, this year we're going to break it down. Is there that sense with this upcoming Falcons team?
I think so. I think, you know, the offense was amazing last year, one of the best of all time. There's probably going to be a little bit of regression under new offensive coordinator Steve Sarkisian with the departure of Kyle Shanahan, but they still should be a good offense. It's just a question of how good. But the real hope and sort of expectation for this upcoming season rests on the Falcons defense. They struggled for most of last season. They seem to start to turn things around towards the end of the season. They have a lot of youth, speed and athleticism on that side of the ball. They're expecting some of their young guys to grow up this year and really sort of consolidate and gel into what could be one of the better units in the NFL in the very near future, and hopefully that future is this season in 2017.
All right, let's talk about each of those phases of the ball, starting with the offense. Last year, it was pretty much a historical offensive performance by this team. FalconsWire.com said that they scored, wrote that they scored 540 total points. That's an offense that led the NFL in scoring, averaging 33.8 points a game. They had 63 touchdowns. That was the most scored by any team last season. Just an incredible offensive season for the Atlanta Falcons last year. Now, as you mentioned at the top of the show, Steve Sarkisian is the new offensive coordinator. Kyle Shanahan is the head coach over at San Francisco, so he's left. What's going to happen with this Falcons offense? Here's what head coach Dan Quinn said about Steve Sarkisian.
And one of the real challenges, like, can you take a good thing and try to make it better? And that's the mindset that he went after. When we went through the audit for the season, these are some things that we're doing really well. These are some things I think we can add to it. So it was kind of, you know, when you have fresh eyes on a new subject and you can look at it from a different point of view, that was actually really helpful for us. And oftentimes us as coaches, especially in the NFL, you don't get to do that very often, because in college you may clinic with another college staff and you get to share ideas. Well, in the NFL, like, you know, we're not heading over to the Bears and talking about, you know, stuff that, you know, that they're doing, that we're doing. So it really allowed us to have some fresh eyes on things that we were doing well. And, hey, have you ever thought about doing it this way? And that helped.
Aaron, do you have any clue as to what are some of these new wrinkles that Sarkisian is going to bring to this offense?
One of the interesting things about him that's sort of different from what Kyle Shanahan was when he came to Atlanta was Kyle Shanahan had been an offensive coordinator in the NFL for seven seasons prior to being hired by the Falcons and Dan Quinn. And Steve Sarkisian has been an offensive coordinator, has been a head coach at the collegiate level, has 1 year of experience in the NFL as a quarterbacks coach with the Raiders, where I believe he coached Jamarcus Russell during his rookie season. I'm sure he struck that from his resume. But there is a little bit of a debate whether or not Steve Sarkisian has as developed an offense. I think it works in his favor because he's going to be doing a lot of the same things that Kyle Shanahan did. So the fact that he doesn't have sort of this already sort of cemented offensive system, he can be a little bit more of a chameleon and be a little bit more malleable to run a different person's scheme. But it is also interesting to see what sort of tweaks are in mind. My guess is the team started shifting towards more of a spread of the field, three wide receiver, a little less play action, a little less emphasis on the fullback position. They let their Pro Bowl fullback go, Patrick DeMarco, to Buffalo. They're probably going to try to replace what his production was, his benefit to the ground game, with a little bit more of a spread them out passing attack helmed by Julio Jones and Mohamed Sanu and Taylor Gabriel. So that's the expectation, but we really don't know. And I guess that's a good place for the Falcons to be in, where they can sort of keep people guessing a little bit on their toes as to what they plan to do this season.
Football Outsiders noted that the Falcons used play action last year a league high 27% of the time. And play action works really well when you've got great running backs. And the Falcons have an excellent tandem that I really respect highly. This is Sarkisian talking about Dante Freeman and Coleman, and a little bit about how excited he is about utilizing these guys.
Well, I think Free has come in and practiced really well for a guy who had been out for almost 2 weeks at one point there with some personal stuff, and then, you know, the protocol. He came back on fire and he's practiced really well. And, you know, Tevin and Free are just such a really good 1-2 punch. And they make each other better, A, in practice, and then B, in games, where one guy doesn't have to be in the whole time. I think we're excited to have them both go. And I think for me, this game is exciting in the fact that we get all of our guys out there really for the first time going together, and to be, you know, to be calling plays and managing all that stuff is exciting for me.
He's got a great job. I mean, when you're handed the kind of weapons you guys have down there in Atlanta, it's a pretty cool gig, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, it's one of those things that, as I alluded to earlier, it's like there is an expectation of regression, but there shouldn't be a huge, huge sort of fall off the cliff. It's just sort of the normal ups and downs that you have year to year in the NFL. He's got the best running back tandem in the league, if I say so myself, in Freeman and Coleman. He's got the number one receiver in the league. I know people in Pittsburgh might disagree with that, maybe a couple of people in New York. But in Julio Jones, you have a playmaker in Taylor Gabriel. You have a solid possession guy in Mohamed Sanu. You have a young up-and-coming tight end in Austin Hooper. And, of course, you have the reigning MVP in Matt Ryan, along with a pretty solid offensive line with helmed by Alex Mack, a multi-Pro Bowler. And so you have a lot of things, tools to work with. So it's not as if Sarkisian's coming into a bad gig. So even if he's just only slightly competent, he should be able to do a pretty good job with all those weapons to work with.
Now, Ryan was sacked 37 times last year. That's almost 2.5 per game. And, you know, I found that stat somewhat surprising because that offensive line, from what I've heard, was considered one of the better ones in the conference. Tell me what happened that led to that high sack total, and what, if any, changes have occurred in the offensive line?
Yeah, it's an interesting thing because the offensive line, while probably one of the better offensive lines the Falcons have fielded in recent years, certainly wasn't on the level with, you know, say a team like Dallas or Oakland in terms of having that sort of elite blocking where the quarterback has all day to throw. Matt Ryan was hit a ton. He was hit the most in his NFL career. Last season, he was sacked the most the second most in his NFL career. And the offensive line became problematic in a couple of games that the Falcons lost where they seemed to get overwhelmed by some top-end defensive lines. I think part of it was they played a lot of great defensive lines. They played some of the best defensive lines in the league last year, like Philadelphia. You had, even though the Rams aren't a very good team, they have one of the best defensive lines with Aaron Donald and the rest of those guys. And so you have Seattle as well. I could go down the entire list, but I'll just get to the point in saying that I think part of it was the quality of competition. I think part of it was that the offensive line, while good, is not by any means immaculate in terms of their ability to hold up. I think really the offensive line's value was sort of stabilizing the running game, which then allowed them to build off of that play action in that passing game and sort of generate the big plays and be an explosive offense based off of that, rather than just sort of being that sort of elite unit that can sort of just hold up in pass protection forever and whatnot. So I think that is a legitimate question going into the season. Just how good is this offensive line really? But I think they are one of the better units in the league, and certainly there's a lot to like about them.
Any concerns about any one particular player on that offensive line?
They do have a new starter at right guard, a guy that was a rookie last year, did not play a single snap in Wes Schweitzer. He was a 6th-round pick, if I'm not mistaken. And he's green. He's untested. He's replacing Chris Chester. Chris Chester was by no means a Pro Bowler at that right guard position, but he was a steady veteran that had been a starter in this league for, you know, a decade or so. And though he was proven, if not necessarily spectacular, Schweitzer is unproven at this point. The early returns through preseason are that he looks competent. You know, looks like he should be able to hold his own, but he's facing a lot of good D tackles this year. He's in the division. You got guys like Kawan Short and Star Low to Lele. You got Gerald McCoy in Tampa Bay. You got Sheldon Rankins in New Orleans. They also like to kick inside Cameron Jordan every now and then. So he's certainly going to have a sheer amount of tests ahead of him. And so we'll find out a lot about him this season. But I think the Falcons hope that sandwiching him between one of the better centers in the league, Alex Mack, if not the best center in the league, and one of the better right tackles in the league, and Ryan Schrader, they will be able to sort of ride any storm if he does struggle out the gates.
Let's talk about the defense. Last year, they gave up about 28 or 29 points per game in their first 10 games. And then all of a sudden, something changed, and they reduced that by almost a full touchdown down to 22 points per game. Any particular players or changes in schemes that accounted for that midseason improvement and and propelled them into the playoffs and Super Bowl?
Yeah, Dan Quinn took over defensive play calling duties in week 12. Or right after week 12, can't remember if he was during or after the Kansas City game, from Richard Smith, who's no longer with the team. They promoted the former secondary coach, Marquand Manuel, to defensive coordinator this year. But the change in play calling, they shifted away from sort of the classic zone-heavy cover three scheme that Dan Quinn made famous as a defensive coordinator in Seattle, and Seattle still runs a lot of to this day, to more of a man-heavy. They still played with that single high safety in Ricardo Allen, but their young linebackers, their young defensive backs like Keanu Neal and Deion Jones were just not really clicking in the zone. There was a little bit too much for them, and they simplified things by playing a little bit more man coverage. They also, that allowed those guys to play faster, and so one of the big reasons that they benefited in the second half and down the stretch was that they were able to create a lot more turnovers, and even though they weren't a great red zone team, they were able to get some stops and create more opportunities for their offense. And I think they hope that with the addition of Don Terry Poe this offseason, that will certainly beef up their run defense and help them solidify their red zone defense and be a little bit less soft up the middle with the young guys making those strides and being a little bit more, you know, Dan Quinn's famous for saying he likes his defenders and players to play fast and physical, and that's what they're expecting out of this team. They're expecting them to fly around, knock heads, and create fumbles and get interceptions and be just a fast, athletic defense that the Seahawks were known for in their heyday and still are, but not quite to the level that they were a couple of years ago when Quinn was a defensive coordinator.
In that NFC Championship game, the Falcons, they blitzed Aaron Rodgers quite a bit in that game, but they're not really considered a heavy blitzing team. Am I correct in that?
That is correct. I don't know the exact stats, but I know they were near the bottom, if not at the bottom, in terms of how many times they brought extra rushers last season.
So do you think that that's going to change at all against a team like Chicago, who has a new quarterback in Mike Glennon, and historically he has not played well under pressure? He doesn't have the mobility in the pocket. Do you foresee the Falcons perhaps blitzing more on Sunday?
It's possible. There has been talk this offseason that the Falcons will be a little bit more aggressive with dialing up blitzes. They've moved weak side linebacker Devondre Campbell to the strong side, and there's been thoughts of allowing him to rush the quarterback a little bit more from that position. There's also been talk of Vic Beasley, who led the NFL in sacks last year, has been primarily a guy that plays on passing downs, but they might get some action on run downs as a stand-up linebacker, and thus you would want him to be rushing the quarterback in those situations as well when it calls upon. I think with the Packer game in particular, that was more an adjustment made specifically to the Packers, because the Packers play a lot of empty sets, and when they would spread the field and go empty, there was nobody to pick up that free rusher coming off the corner in the slot, and that was often Brian Poole, and he got a number of hits on and a lot of clean, hard shots on Aaron Rodgers in that game. I don't necessarily know that's something that they're going to try to do every week, but if there's an opportunity like it was in that NFC Championship game to take advantage of a team that's sort of going to basically open the doors to allow them to blitz a lot more, I think they'll take it. I don't know if Chicago's going to be that team, because I know Chicago likes to use a lot of tight ends, so they'll probably try to chip guys and whatnot to sort of slow down the Falcons' pass rush and sort of dial back their blitz. And I don't think it's really necessary, given that Chicago doesn't have maybe the world's greatest wide receiver core at this point, given the injuries to the Cameron Meredith and Marcus Wheaton. So we'll see how it goes. But I do think there's a chance that the blitz will be more. They'll blitz more this season than they did last year, but I don't necessarily know if it's going to be a huge, huge part of their defense.
You're being very kind when you describe the Chicago Bears wide receiver core as not being the greatest. You're being very, very kind. Talk to me about Jalen Collins. He was suspended for 10 games. Is that a significant loss for the team?
It could be. That's the question. It's when Desmond Trufant went down with a pectoral injury last season, midway through last season, Jalen Collins provided a huge spark for the Falcons. Even that was about the time where the team sort of started to turn things around. Now, it wasn't necessarily because Collins came in for Trufant, but it was just more of a coincidence that was about the time when the team started to play better, or really the other 10 guys on the field started to play a little bit better. But Jalen Collins really sort of helped them out down the stretch last year. Was sort of counted on this offseason to be a guy that would sort of solidify as the third corner. One of the things with Football Outsiders, who you mentioned earlier, they graded the Falcons in terms of their defensive efficiency against slot receivers last year as the 29th best in the league. And while undrafted rookie Brian Poole was admirable for an undrafted rookie and played well early in the season, he tended to struggle a little bit down the stretch when the team shifted to a more man press heavy scheme, because he's a little bit of a smaller, more zone oriented sort of corner. And Collins is much more in line with that fit and that scheme that they play towards down the stretch. And missing him, it does raise concerns whether or not some of these better receiver groups that the Falcons will face this year, and no offense, but maybe Chicago isn't on that list, as you said. But in future weeks, it is a concern whether or not Brian Poole and some of the other young cornerbacks that they have will be as capable of matching up with some of these receivers as Collins could potentially be. So it remains to be seen. Hopefully Poole and guys like C.J. Goodwin, who's a converted wide receiver, guys like Deji Olatoya, who they scooped up from Dallas a year ago, will be able to sort of provide quality reps off the bench behind Desmond Trufant and Robert Alford, who are arguably one of the two or three best cornerback duos in the league. So that could be a potential area where you could attack this defense if those guys aren't up to par. And it remains to be seen if this team sort of is still invested in Collins, given this was his second suspension for PEDs. And I think they're sort of keeping him around just in case these other cornerbacks struggle. But I do think they're in the position where they want to be able to afford the possibility of moving on from him when he comes off suspension, if these other guys step up in the meantime.
Last question on the defense, Tack McKinley, what's he looked like? I know that Pro Football Focus rated him as the best rookie pass rusher in the 4-3 defense during the preseason, even though he didn't have a sack. But so what have you seen out of that young man, and what kind of playing time will you expect to see him get on Sunday?
He's looked really good in limited action in the preseason. He's primarily been used as a passing down guy, so he's really gotten opportunities to sort of pin his ears back and get after the quarterback, use that first step quickness that really just, you know, blew by a couple of starters in some of those preseason games against Arizona, like DJ Humphreys in Pittsburgh with Ali Villanueva. And so one of the things, the Falcons love his length. They love his potential as a bull rusher and power rusher. They love his speed. And so he looks, you know, he's done everything that you want him to do, except record a sack that you would want at this point. He's basically slated for the role that the team used Dwight Freeney last year, which was primarily a nickel down pass rusher opposite Vic Beasley. They have Beasley lined up on the left side. They'll probably use Tack lined up at right defensive end, so he'll be going up against some of the better left tackles that the Falcons will face this year. But they'll also sort of platoon him with Adrian Claiborne, but sometimes they'll kick Adrian Claiborne inside the D-tackle so that they can get basically their three best pass rushers in Beasley, Claiborne, and Tack on the field at the same time. They also have Grady Jarrett, who came alive in the Super Bowl, got three sacks in that game. So they're really sort of, the arrow is pointing up with the team's pass rush overall, and they expect Tack to be a significant contributor to that, even if it's in a limited role.
All right, the most important question is the last one. What do the Falcons have to do on Sunday in order to blow this game against the Bears?
They basically have to lose the game in the trenches. The strength of the Bears team is their running game, is their offensive line, is their front seven. And I think the Bears want to make this a game. The Eagles were able to beat the Falcons by playing a run heavy. Let's just pound it down their throats. Let's, you know, dominate their offensive line, hit Matt Ryan all day long, stop the run. And that's how the Eagles beat the Falcons last season. I think that's the only way the Bears can really stand a chance to beating the Falcons. The Bears do have some of the pieces that you would look for. The one that Jordan Howard, Tariq Cohen, excellent pair of running back. And we might be talking about them in a couple of years as in on the same level as guys like Freeman and Coleman as the best duo in the league. They're dealing with the injury with Kyle Long. That's something they'll have to overcome if they're going to be able to control the ball on the ground with ball control. They have a good front seven. They'll need it to look like a great front seven to really sort of harass Matt Ryan and really stop this Falcons run attack and sort of mask some of their secondary deficiencies, particularly with Prince Amukamara not expected to play. So I think the Falcons, the way the Falcons can blow this game is by overlooking the Bears, looking past them to their second week game against Green Bay, that rematch for the NFC Championship game, and thinking that they'll just show up on Soldier Field and with the Mike Glennon going up against Mike Glennon and feeling like this is a team that is beneath us and sort of taking them seriously and then coming out in that first quarter and getting punched hard in the mouth and not being able to overcome that. I don't think that's going to happen, but it's certainly a possibility that could happen. And we'll see sort of, I think the Bears will be in the position where they'll try to challenge the Falcons' toughness, and I hope the Falcons will be able to respond.
Aaron, will you be drinking a cocktail during the game or a beer? And if so, what you share with our audience, what do you like to drink?
Try to keep things sober because I do the podcast, but maybe the Falcons will drive me to drink. It has happened in the past over the course of the season. So I'll take it slow this Sunday. Usually I'm just buying cheap beer because I'm just using it to get drunk.
Yeah, it gets the job done. Absolutely.
Yeah. But I can't think of a specific brand that I didn't go with that because it was the Super Bowl. I was say normally I would go for some Sam Adams, but last time that was not the case.
Yeah.
It is a New England brand. So
good call on avoiding Sam Adams. Hey, Aaron, why don't you tell our audience where they can follow you on Twitter and promote any of the sites that you work on?
Yeah, they can follow me on Twitter at FalcFans. They can check out one of my podcasts, Locked on Falcons. You can find that posted almost daily at audioboom.com. You can check out the show's Twitter handle at Locked on Falcons. The other show I do is the Twitter handle is Falcons PFC. You can find all the appropriate links over at ProFootballCentral.com. It's called Falcons Central Radio. And that's where you can find me doing my thing this year.
And that on Twitter is FALCFANS, Falk Fans. All right, Aaron, I love talking to somebody who knows their stuff. You certainly do. I really appreciate you coming on.
All right, man. I appreciate you having me on.
All right, we'll talk later in season.
All right, we'll do that.
Take care, brother. All right, as promised, Ross Reed is with me to talk about the Bears-Falcons. Ross, first game of the season. What are you expecting overall from the Chicago Bears team against this high-powered offense of the Atlanta Falcons?
Well, I'm expecting them to lean on their running game, right? I mean, the Bears are very thin at wide receiver right now, but they have a pretty decent offensive line. That's even assuming that Kyle Long doesn't even play in this game. I think their interior offensive line is solid from Grisou to Sitton to Whitehair. And that means you should definitely run the football with a top running back in the league, Jordan Howard. Outstanding rookie in Tariq Cohen. Use Mike Glennon to use a lot of three-step drops, get the football out of his hands quickly to his tight ends and to the receivers that he has. So I expect a lot of ball control from them on offense. On defense, their front seven is solid. Having Danny Trevathan back in the lineup is a huge plus for them. He's a huge weapon for them up the middle. So I expect them to try and shut down Devontae Freeman and try and put some pressure on Matt Ryan. But I expect the Bears to really muck this game up, so to speak, right? Atlanta plays fast, scored over 30 points a game last year. The Bears only averaged like 17 points a game last year. The Bears want to play at a slower pace. really kind of make this a sloppy game where maybe their defense can kind of steal one here in the fourth quarter.
Is the loss of Lamar Houston significant at all, given his injury issues the last two seasons?
You know what? It is not right now, in my opinion, week one. I think it could be as the season goes along. It really depends on the health of Pernell McPhee, right? Because McPhee hasn't been able to stay on the field for the Bears consistently over the last few years. When he has been on the field, he's been a very good pass rusher. But right now, it's like, how much can you rely on with the Bears with Leonard Floyd and Willie Young, right? You need kind of that third and fourth rotational guy. You're hoping that McPhee can be that guy right now. You're hoping McPhee can be more than that guy and kind of live up to his paycheck. But, the history has shown he's going to get hurt at some point in the season again, and that's when you really needed a guy like Lamar Houston to come on board. It really sucks for Lamar that he got hurt in that preseason game. We wish him all the best going forward. I hope he does get healthy.
It's not outlandish to think that McPhee could play as many as 20 snaps, given that he did that last year after he came back from injury. I think it was a Packer game, and despite not having any significant practice time, he went out there for 20 plays in his first game back, and he that was the game, if I recall correctly, that Leonard Floyd started to take off. And so that tandem of when McPhee was on the football field, all of a sudden Leonard Floyd looked like a different football player.
The Bears need McPhee to be on the field, if not for Leonard Floyd's sake, right? McPhee, when he's healthy and when he's on the field, even when he's not healthy, he's still a dynamic pass rusher that other offenses have to game plan for, right? And that can only help a guy like Leonard Floyd. It takes a lot of the pressure off of Floyd and allows him to kind of pin his ears back a little bit. So you're hoping that for the next few weeks here, as the Bears go through a lot of outstanding passing offenses, they got to see Matt Ryan, they have to see Jameis Winston, they have to see Ben Roethlisberger and Aaron Rodgers. You're hoping that McPhee can at least be on the field for those obvious passing downs to help get after the quarterback, help take pressure off of Leonard Floyd and help him out too. To your point, Floyd is a better football player when McPhee is on the outside of on the other side of him.
Now, on the back end, which is for the last several seasons has been the biggest concern for the Chicago Bears, they announced that Eddie Jackson was going to start alongside Quentin Demps. This is Coach John Fox talking about Jackson.
Well, I think for any rookie to come in and earn a starting position, regardless of position, I think it speaks to that. And I think, how hard they work, their work ethic, what their football acumen is, and how fast they adjust. And I think Eddie's got a good background, and obviously has a good football IQ. And I think, that's what enables guys to come in and learn and grasp and execute it under pressure.
What strikes you about the combination of Eddie and Demps on the back end, and just the way they complement?
Well, I think, Quentin, when we signed him was, to bring some experience. We did that earlier in 15. It just didn't work out injury-wise. But, I think it's critical back there. You have a guy that can kind of direct traffic and kind of foresee things, anticipate motions and checks and all the things that happen very fast in football. So, I think, Quentin probably has the most experience of that, but, Eddie's adapted well, and it's not easy because you're kind of quarterback in the coverage unit. Regardless of how many DBs are out there, there's a lot of communication that occurs, and he's adapted very well.
I'm really excited about this safety tandem, but my goodness, you talk about being thrown into the fire. This Falcons passing attack is outstanding. What should be Bears fans' legitimate expectations from this new safety duo, one of which includes a rookie?
Yeah, I mean, listen, first off, the reason why Eddie Jackson's out there starting this week over Adrian Amos and probably going forward is because he shows ability to take the football away, right? That was his MO when he played at Alabama. And for him to be a rookie and the Bears took him in the fourth round, to me, this was late first round, second round talent, right? His injuries cost him to go in the fourth round. But with that said, this guy has played under Nick Saban, who's an outstanding football coach, especially in the secondary, right? It's a big time program there. He should be ready to go and ready to step into this role. He's that good of a football player, but he's playing because he's starting because he can take the football away, as is Marcus Cooper, the reason why the Bears signed him, as is the other safety, Quentin Demps, the reason why the Bears signed him, right? The Bears have struggled in the last few years under John Fox to take the football away, most importantly in the backfield, right? And if they want to beat these teams like Atlanta, like Tampa Bay, like we talked about, like Green Bay, they've got to start getting some takeaways. So this comes down to Eddie Jackson, Demps, and the crew. Now, what are we going to see out of the new safety tandem? They're probably going to struggle at the beginning, right? A lot of communication issues, a lot of, you know, stuff like that. They're going to have their growing pains, so to speak. But I think that these guys are very talented. I think that the two safeties are very good together. They're a good fit together, and I think they're going to be able to pick it up really fast. I think they're going to rely on their athleticism and you know, how they're able to play football as well. And hopefully they're going to pick things up pretty quickly. I mean, Matt Ryan is a tough test. This is the reigning MVP. But again, you have to, you know, if you're in the back end, to me, you're only as good as that front seven in front of you. If those guys like Mafee and Floyd are getting after Matt Ryan, that makes Eddie Jackson's first game a lot easier.
Now, you mentioned that the Bears are going to have to run the ball. And so this is what Atlanta's head coach Quinn said about Jordan Howard.
He can really run downhill. In some ways, they're similar to our zone scheme, where you can press the line of scrimmage, make one cut, and then really get downhill. So it's the strength, you know, as a big back, where he can lower his pads, and then the contact, you know, he can get yards after contacts. That's one of the things that impressed us about.
One of the things that I'm concerned about, and everybody's talking about how great this offensive line is for the Chicago Bears, but I'm concerned that they have not played as a unit. The starting unit has not played much together, and that Kyle Long is probably not going to go on Sunday. Do you have legitimate concerns about that?
I do, but I still feel good about the unit as a whole. I think from left to right, you know, those guys do have some experience with each other. They have practiced with each other for a long time. Look, I mean, Kyle Long hasn't been able to give it a go for, you know, all of training camp for the most part. Preseason games. So, you know, I think that, you know, Grasso getting the experience in the preseason and training camp and getting his feet wet. But again, remember, this is a third round pick. He's, you know, for a center, that's pretty high. He's got talent. He came from a big program in Oregon. He should be able to step in and fill this role. Cody Whitehair is a natural guard. That's what he played at Kansas State, you know, even though he was an outstanding rookie last year at center. And we know what Josh Sitton can do as an all-pro guard. So I think the Bears will be okay there. What I'm most concerned about is, you know, Dow Loggins and the Bears can't rely solely on stuffing Jordan Howard, keep feeding him, keep making it obvious situations where the Falcons know that Jordan Howard is going to get the football and run certain spots, right? You're going to have to be a little creative against this football team, and you're going to have to, you know, keep them on their heels a little bit. Use Jordan Howard as a decoy sometimes, and don't just shove him the football just, you know, out of spite, right? In obvious situations, it's 2nd and 7. We're going to give Jordan Howard the football for maybe another 2-yard gain.
Well, and that is sort of what Fox was talking about at Thursday's press conference when he talked about the first game of the season, and it's basically teams looking at each other that are different from at least a bit from what they were last year. Listen to John Fox.
Any first game, you know, it is unique. I mean, their team's different, our team's different. You know, their coaching staff hasn't seen them play in a real game, and neither have we, you know, in the 2017 season. So it's always a unique feeling, both for players, coaches, you know, and I'm sure for even fans. You know, it's a new season. It's the start of it. You don't know exactly what to expect, you know, and that makes it challenging. You know, I think there's unscouted looks. You know, again, they've got two different coordinators. You know, even though we might remain the same, you know, there's things we haven't used in the preseason, just like I know there's things they haven't used in the preseason. And, you know, it'd be it's a game of adjustments. You know, you watch the kickoff classic of college football, and, you know, it came down to special teams. Those are two powerhouses that went at each other, and, you know, two very talented teams, and both fought hard. And, it came down to the, quote, third phase, you know, albeit an important one, and that was special teams. So that'll be a factor as well.
Well, what do you think about this offense? What could they possibly do? You talked about, you know, let's not feed Jordan Howard the ball, you know, 50 times a game. Are you expecting to see triple tight end sets? And do you think that Mike Glennon can be relied on to throw effectively to the wide receivers?
Yeah, listen, number one, John Fox is absolutely correct, right? Like week one, anything's up for grabs. If this was a Week 15 game, I think we'd all say the Falcons would probably win by two or three touchdowns, right? But because Week 1 is on the board, everything gets thrown out the window and anything can happen here. Now, the Bears on offense, they can't go out and look at the Atlanta Falcons on offense and say, we've got to match those guys, right? They're not going to be able to do it. There is no Julio Jones on the Bears or Mohamed Sanu or even Matt Ryan and Devontae Freeman, right? They've got to be able to play their own game. They've got to find that balance that they found. And I look back to that third preseason game that Dow Loggins had against the Titans, where he had some outstanding play calls from Mike Glennon. What that means is, you've got to feed Jordan Howard the football, but not too much and not make it too predictable. Put Mike Glennon in some three-step drops, some, 5-7 yard passes, and hopefully you can get some matchups to your favor. Matchups to your favor is meaning you're not going to get, your wide receivers maybe to beat a lot of guys out on the edge, but maybe Kevin White or Kendall Wright lines up on the inside and they can kind of beat some guys through the slot over the middle. Zach Miller to me is a matchup problem, especially if you line him up outside, because you don't know what to do with him. You don't know if you have to put a safety on him or a linebacker or even a corner. Tariq Cohen is a matchup nightmare for teams. You're going to have the Bears are going to have to kind of utilize some of these one-on-one matchup issues that they might have against the Falcons and really attack them. This Falcons defense is not that great to me, right? Vic Beasley is a good football player, especially coming off the edge. But this was also a team last year that struggled to take the football away, and we saw what happened to them in the Super Bowl. They're liable to give up a lot of points. The Bears have to be patient as much as possible. I cannot stress that enough, and just stick to their game plan no matter what happens. And I think they can at least be in this game late in the third quarter, early fourth quarter.
Are the Bears starting the best quarterback?
They're starting the best quarterback right now. I think talent-wise, they're not starting the best quarterback. But for Week 1 at home against the Atlanta Falcons, yes, they're starting the best quarterback. You know the crazy thing is, have you ever looked at Mike Glennon's stats like against the Falcons? And, he played in the same division as the Falcons when he was with the Buccaneers. He's something crazy. Like, he has like 6 touchdowns and 0 interceptions and a 72% completion rate. Now, I know that doesn't mean much of anything for Week 1, but, you got to give him a little bit of credit in that regard, right? The guy's still a little bit of a veteran here, and, he's the right guy to start Week 1. Now, he should have a quick hook if things go sour really quickly, because Mitchell Trubisky is the best quarterback in the roster talent-wise. Just don't know if he's ready yet mentally in terms of the preparation and what it takes to be a starting quarterback in the NFL every week. Remember, this is a guy that doesn't have a lot of experience, even in the collegiate level. And then all of a sudden, you want to catapult him to be a starting in the NFL. That's really tough.
Well, early in the week, Coach Dan Quinn did say that they were preparing because they didn't know if Glennon was going to start or Trubisky, he claims. And so he said that early in the week, they were preparing to see either quarterback. And when asked why or how they were preparing, he says, well, clearly we don't know much about either quarterback and how he fares with the Bears and how the system and so forth. But we do know that Trubisky is the most athletic. And so we have to watch for those rollout passes and so forth. So it's kind of interesting that you bring that up. If he has a quick hook and we see Trubisky in the second half, that could lend a whole new complexion to the game. The Falcons claim they'll be ready for it, but we'll see. What do you think has to happen? One particular thing you think has to happen in order for the Bears to upset the Falcons at Soldier Field Sunday?
They've got to run the football very, very well. They've got to take care of the football, meaning they've got to win the turnover battle, and I think they've got to knock Matt Ryan down at least 8 to 10 times a game. That's not saying 8 to 10 sacks, but they've got to make him feel uncomfortable in that pocket and maybe come away with 2 or 3 sacks, but really knock him down a little bit and use that bad Soldier Field to your advantage. And hopefully Julio Jones can't really get off like he likes to, because that field is not as good.
And the sad thing is that this Chicago Bears team under John Fox hasn't really used their home field advantage to, very well. I don't have the numbers in front of me as to what their one loss record is, but it's not very good with John Fox at the helm. You think that might change this year?
I don't know. I would like to think so. I think their first four games, their first quarter season is brutal. I think there are some opportunities in the middle part of the season and the late part of the season. But he's going to have a tough go of things, you know, just because of that schedule at the early on. I'll say this, like I said before, anything can happen week one, right? So if he pulls off that week one upset, then all of a sudden, Monday morning in Chicago and Halas Hall, things are looking a lot better than we thought they were. And that's the kind of energy that you need that can catapult to a team to maybe taking that next step from a 3-13 season last year.
Ross, when you're watching the game Sunday, what are you going to be drinking?
Ooh, good question. So it's a noon start. You know, you start off a little light with a few Coors Lights, something like that. And then as the game goes along, if it's looking good, you know, you might celebrate with the whiskey. If it's looking bad, then you're going to join your sours with the whiskey.
You know, I'm so happy to hear you say that because you are in tremendous shape. So the fact that you imbibe and still have that physique that you carry around with you and that you help others sculpt their bodies that way, that's encouraging for fat guys like me.
80-20 rule, my man. I try and keep it clean Monday through Thursday or Friday so I can enjoy my football and my Coors Light and my whiskey on the weekends.
Well, are your services for hire? If so, why don't you let our followers know about your personal trainer business?
Absolutely. I'm in the West Loop, Chicago at Fit Pro West. You can hit me up, Ross Reed, R-E-A-D, @gmail.com. Follow me on Instagram, same name, @RossReed, and follow me on Twitter, @RossReed. Listen, I love helping out everybody. Love talking sports. Love talking Bears, football, you know it. So I'm excited for the season to start.
Did you give out your Twitter address?
@RossReed, R-E-A-D.
Excellent. And you really should be following Ross because he is he will engage you in conversation. He'll debate you. He'll laugh with you. He'll share his opinion. He'll listen to your opinion. He's just a great follow on Twitter. So hopefully you're doing that. And you're listening to his shows. Ross, tell our audience the podcast that you're working on.
You can find me. Mac and Reed show is recorded every Monday. That's after game day. We cover all bases. Me and my co-host, Evan Mack, who's an outstanding guy in Chicago. We do all kinds, football, baseball, pop culture, hip hop, you name it. We like to talk it all. So we have a lot of fun. You can find us on SoundCloud. Just search @Mac, M-A-C, and Reed, R-E-A-D.
Would it be fun to have you and your partner on a future show so we can talk together and have some fun?
All good. Love to do it.
All right, Ross. Okay, every year I like to make some preposterous predictions at the beginning of the season. These are things that are not likely to happen, but you never know. The ones that pan out, I will remind you about for a very long time. The many that don't, you will forget about in no time, I hope. I've got three.
Three.
By midseason, Dow Loggins will begin to heat up as one of the hottest NFL head coaching candidates by virtue of the Bears' stellar offensive play. That's right, and by season's end, the diminutive offensive coordinator will be among the biggest names out there, where he will eventually land the job with, who else, the New York Giants. Eddie Jackson will duplicate Mark Carrier's 1990 season with the Bears by winning the Defensive Rookie of the Year award and leading the NFL in interceptions with 10. Those 10 interceptions are the most ever for a Bear in one season, and at season's end, it's Eddie Jackson and Mark Carrier sharing that record.
One.
Mitch Trubisky will smash Andrew Luck's single-game passing yards record of 433, which he set in 2012. Trubisky will smash it by 66 yards. That's right, number 10 will post 499 yards passing on Christmas Eve against the Cleveland Browns. Merry Christmas, Bears. Okay, that's our show. I want to leave you with the sounds of NFL films, classic music from the 60s and 70s, the voice of God, John Facenda, and the incredible audio picked up by NFL Films microphones. There's no better way to get ready for the season than listening to this track NFL films mixed together for their CD, The Power and the Glory. Remember, if you drink, please do not drive, and always bear down.
Professional football in America is a special game, a unique game. Played nowhere else on earth, it is a rare game. The men who play it make it so.
Hey, baby, let's go out there like a bunch of crazy dogs and have some fun.
Coming now, buddy. We on our horse all day long. Let's just kick that ball all day long.
Pick it up. Don't stop. Pick it up. Let's go.
Get after the ball. Tattoo somebody.
Regulator, mount up. We're coming.
Pro football is a mirror of early America. Reflecting toughness, courage, and self-denial.
There he is! Whoa! Whoa! Good job! Good job!
That's why to make a play out there, buddy. Nice job.
Over Pirate 2, ready.
45 blast!
Yeah, 20, 20.
45 blast!
Keep them playing at this level now, huh? Keep it up, baby. Keep it up.
We're gonna be here all day, baby!
Hey in there, little buddy. They're coming at you. Better smile.
Is this fun or what?
The game is wide open, not confined. X's and O's on a blackboard are translated into imagination on the field. It can be one man rising above the obscurity of the grim, no-glory duty of special teams. It is a lineman clawing through the carnage at the scrimmage line and devouring a quarterback.
Round right, Fox 2 run on set, ready?
The game is perpetual motion. A swirl of flying bodies in constant collision. A 2.5 hour carnival of color, sound, and action.
I got a little something for you.
There's glory in the legends of this hard muscle life, and there's poetry in each season made of sweat and strife. But now's the time to work and strain at a sport that tests the spirit and challenges the brain.
Come on, come on, let's go.
Yeah, I'd like to have 75 degrees and sunny all the time too, but that's not football.
Do you fear the force of the wind, the slash of the rain?
We're gonna play it through lightning and rain.
Go face them and fight them. Be savage again.
This Doug lights your fireman, the pilot lights out.
This football team is coming into our place. We're standing in our way.
This is a game of the heart. Focus and finish.
A time for achievement, a time for purpose, a time